Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It's getting more and more dicey in the courtroom as the trial of Karen Reed continues on, and very different vibe as round two plays out as compared to what we saw last year in the trial one of Karen Reed. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, joining us to discuss. We got some clips to watch, some pieces to break down. I know you've been doing some research on this over the week. Tell me what you've been digging into in terms of Karen Reed and, you know, the odds of her being the person that's at fault here.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, the anytime where we have cases like this, where we have a lot of conjecture and we have a lot of lack of substantial data points and real evidence that's being contested on both sides, and we have really subjective observations by witnesses on site that is inebriated with a lot of alcohol and late nights and all those things, I just look at data. I'm always looking at patterns of behavior from past to present and looking at laws of probability. And so with this one, because we're still muddled down where who said, she said, refuting back and forth. And so you look at what the defense is claiming, because right now prosecution's making the point that, hey, she hit him, she ran away, he died. I mean, that's kind of the basis of what they're saying. But what actually the defense is saying is that they're saying that he was assaulted and got in a fight inside the house and maybe a dog's involved. So that's what I do my deep analysis on. All right, so here's what the defense is saying. And so I looked far and wide as I could, doing deep searches, and the relationships of everyone inside that house outside of Karen. She knew everyone or people inside that house as long as that she was dating Proctor. I mean, O'Keefe.
O'Keefe.
Yeah. And so she
that'd be an interesting relationship.
Who knows, man, right?
Exactly.
And so that was like roughly a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's as long as she knew everyone in that house. And so everyone in that house knew each other either by marriage or relationship with inside the police department, not anywhere between 5 and 20 years, maybe even longer in some. In all that time span, of all that time together, there's nothing on public record. Who knows what goes on behind the scenes, but nothing in social media, nothing on public record. No charges of malfeasance against any of the officers in the house for impropriety as an officer. In other words, there's been zero reported actions of violence or aggression by anyone in that house for 5 to 20 years of any of those relationships. And what defense is claiming is that on this night, we had a major deviation from those relationships. The likelihood of that, as if you're looking at law of averages, with the assessment I did, is 20%. There's only a 20% chance that something like that happened. And so when you're looking at only about a 20, again, very subjective, my analysis, obviously it's human behavior, so it's subjective. But if you're looking at such a low probability of that action happening inside the house when there's never, ever, ever been any sort of report or anything of that happening, that's what defense has to overcome. They have to be so solid in everything they're saying that it's going to sway a jury's opinion that that's probable. And so that's what they're battling this uphill road on, is the fact that it just doesn't make any logical sense that there would be any sort of assault against, you know, O'Keefe inside that house.
20% chance of that happening. But what, I mean, okay, I get that part of it. That's one piece of the equation, though. 20% chance of there being somebody fighting and
right,
them getting into it and something going horribly wrong and he dies. What's the percentage, and I don't know that you'd have this, but I think it'd probably be insanely low, that then you have 40 plus other people going along with the story and all
even lower.
And people who don't even know each other that are going to be willing to put their lives, their career, everything on the line to frame Karen Reed to cover up that John O'Keefe got in a fight with one of the guys in the house or some of the, or whatever happened allegedly, that And then everybody's at this house party and they're all in the same place for the most part. And nobody sees this house everybody knows about it and they're covering it up. Or somehow they snuck his body out to the front yard and still nobody noticed. And then somehow all the first responders are in on it too. And they're all framing Karen Reed and they're all lying and saying, she said, I did it. And she's saying she didn't say that, even though some places she said she did say it. But her current stance is, I didn't say I did it or I hit him. It's did I hit him, even though she's on camera saying the opposite. So anyway, we go back to the laws of probability and in all of these people, first responders, the people testing blood alcohol levels, the containers themselves, all of it against Karen Reed. That's where it gets to be completely insane, because I can understand the 20%. That's somewhat of a reasonable doubt if it was just that. But it wasn't like there was one guy in the house and then this happened and nobody could have seen it. You're talking a lot of people in the house. Nobody saying anything bad ever took place. People are actually complimenting Karen Reed via text on the way out, but I guess that's a ruse. And they're texting, hey, it was a fun night, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like you would normally do after a good night with friends. And somehow all of this is a ruse. And everything that Karen is saying is true, and everybody else is somehow out to get her. That's got to be like 0.0000 something percent at to go to that level, does it not?
Yeah, so the 20% is just the probability of violence against him at the house.
Yeah.
Irrespective of anything else. But
that
like
even feels
said,
high to me.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
In my 22 years with the FBI, never once did I see anything that could – I've never seen a conspiracy work.
And
even if I've been part of cases or investigations where someone had a thought or idea to make an attempt, it fell apart within seconds because you can't, like you said, you can't herd cats. And when you're trying to do a mass conspiracy of a cover up of truth of observation, you just can't. No. It's one reason why you interview multiple people. And there's another way that when you interview too, that the entire thing falls apart. You know, one of the interviewing strategies and tactics that you want to do if someone's trying to deceive you is you have them, all right, so tell me what happened. You always want people to establish a timeline. People have an easier time lying forward than lying backward. And what I mean by that is they can make stuff up on the fly if you make it progressive, like, all right, so what happened next? So what happened next? So what happened next? Basically, if you want to see if someone is actually fabricated or not, saying, all right, so let's start from, all right, we know he died. What happened 10 minutes before that? What happened 10 minutes before that? What happened? So people have a very, very hard time remembering in reverse if they're making it up. So that is one thing that you can do to kind of assess whether we're dealing with a fictitious or not. And then when you cross compare that fabrication with at least one other person's fabrication or three, it becomes chaos within seconds. And that's why it's implausible. It's completely implausible.
It is. And that's the thing with conspiracies. Why do so many people believe conspiracies work and that they're true? I mean, now, not to say that there hasn't been a conspiracy in the world that has worked, because there has. But for the most part, your likelihood of them working with multiple people involved goes extremely down the more people you add into it. But it's believed by so many that, oh yeah, that's very plausible. That could be true. Is it just a fear of reality, a fear of of wanting to deny that other human beings could be this bad, that they could potentially have the ability to do these things? So it must be a conspiracy that villainizes this group over here because this one over here couldn't do it. At the same way, I mean, it almost sometimes the conspiracies get far more villainous and a scarier world to live in, thinking that that could be a possibility versus the simple thing over here. It defies a lot of logic, which is why it's a conspiracy.
So there's a lot of reasons why people believe in conspiracies. So let's take a conjecture at this one. First of all, as Homo sapiens, it's what allowed us to evolve beyond Neanderthals and become the species that we're on the planet is our ability to weave stories. And we gravitate towards stories that have meaning to us. And meaning to us is what's important here. So what happens is that in cases like this, again, there's a lot of reasons why people believe in conspiracy theories. But I believe there's some elements here of this type, and that is, if you like or dislike someone, you're then going to have confirmation bias. When you have confirmation bias, and the way our brains work is that you're going to only suck in information that allows you to validate your own opinion of what you believe happened subjectively. Mm-hmm. I like this person, so I'm not going to see anything that is negative. I'm only going to see the positive. And if the positive doesn't fit the narrative I'm trying to make it fit, then I'm going to create something that does. Hence, you get a conspiracy. And so we create patterns of behavior that may or may not be there that fit the outcome that we're looking for. In other words, they're not taking a very scientific approach to it. They're taking a very, hey, here's the destination I want. I'm going to fit the world around the destination I want, rather than saying, hey, let's take in data and see where it leads us. I mean, how many times have we heard that? Is, hey, let's go where the evidence brings us.
Yeah.
That's what you and I do, is we go where the evidence brings mm-hmm. us, and we try to interpret the things we're seeing to see what outcome we will get. It's why when looking at Richard Allen in Delphi, none of the data supports the outcome.
Yeah.
Because we kept looking. None of that pattern of behavior fits what the outcome wound up being. That's why I'm not sold on the outcome, because I don't believe the outcome, because the pattern of behavior didn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you know, we're just looking at patterns of behavior. It's not fitting the defensive narrative today the way they're presenting it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.